On this episode of The Big Number, Luka's playoff numbers in his first two games as a Lakers show. Once again, how massively Nico Harrison fumbled the bag when he traded Luka away and put him side by side next to LeBron James. Plus, what, if anything, can the Timberwolves do to take hold of the series? Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Big Number. It's the show that I do every week here at Yahoo Sports with my guy, Dan. Dan, how are you?
Tom, I'm doing great, but you sound like you've been coaching a seven-game series. What's going on with you?
Yeah, I got my Doc Rivers going this week. I think you know, last week we didn't have the show, me and you. I took off last week. I had spring break with my kids, and I realized the teachers do most of the yelling is what I learned. And so, you know, trying to get the kids corralled in New York City, and we're at Battery Park. Where do my kids go? I got to go scream and say, where, Madeline, where are you? I think I lost my voice. Also from like this like steam stack that's coming out of the sewer outside my hotel, Dan. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Just some fumes coming up from the underground in New York City. You're a New York City a veteran. Like, I don't know what's coming out of the ground in New York City.
Yeah, you don't really want to. It's most of our Ninja Turtles and Gators are down there, so you want to stay. You want to steer clear of them. Your commentary about kids and New York and playoffs, it made me think of JB Bickerstaff, coach of the Detroit Pistons. I caught them for Game 2, where the Pistons beat the Knicks to even up that series. And before the game, he was talking to his young team and saying, like, I can tell you how to prepare for the playoffs, but you got to feel it, right? You got to experience it for the first time. And he said, it's kind of like with my kids, you know, I'll tell them something and then like the dumb shit that they shouldn't do. And then they do it and they go, oh, wait, that was dumb. And so like they have to do it and experience it themselves. And that was one part of it. And the second part is after the game, you go to his post-game press conference, and the first question, and it's like, well, I thought that we were... Like, he was completely hoarse from having been screaming for 2.5 hours. So I think
One more time. What did he sound like?
Like, well, it was kind of like it all cracked and crumbled and didn't go exactly the way. But, I mean, the game went the way he planned. The voice, maybe not so much. But you playing through it, playing through steam stacks and travel, you know, all we could ask for in the postseason, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And everyone says it in the NBA. The players say it all the time. If you're not hurt and banged up at this point, you're not trying. You're not a real winner. And I think that goes for us here on The Big Number as well. I'm playing through it. I'm fighting through it, just like Doc Rivers is fighting through this series against the Indiana Pacers. But that is not the topic of The Big Number this week. Dan, this week's Big Number is 34.0. That is Luka Doncic's scoring average in his first two playoff games as a Los Angeles Laker, which means that LeBron James has played 22 years and has never played with a guy who has scored this many points in their first two playoff games. So Luka Doncic, 34 points per game, not Dwayne Wade, not Anthony Davis, not Kyrie Irving, not J.R. Smith himself has averaged this. I know, Dan, I swear to you, Luka Doncic might be better at basketball than J.R. Smith, but I digress. The point is, LeBron's never had a teammate this good. He's never had a teammate score this much, at least in the first two opening games. And I think it's a good reminder for people at home. Nico Harrison, I knew it was good. Quickly, we got into this quickly, bringing up Nico Harrison. Nico Harrison didn't just trade a 25-year-old who took the Dallas Mavericks to the NBA Finals. He also traded the number two guy in NBA history in career scoring average in the playoffs. He is number two behind Michael Jordan. That's it. Luka Doncic, now with 34 points a game in this postseason over his first two games, he's increased his career scoring average in the postseason to 31 points per game. That is higher than everybody not named Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And so this is what we're getting, is not only did he just eviscerate Nico Harrison and Jason Kidd and the Dallas Mavericks with 45 points after crying his eyes out and kind of having that Looney Tunes flubbering bottom lip, trying to keep it all together, and then he scored 45. He keeps doing this And now the Lakers have split the series. And I just think that people need to be reminded how good this guy is. And especially in the playoffs, he raises his game. And you're seeing it with the Lakers now that they've split the series 1-1. Luka Doncic is raising the bar again, 34 points per game. And also, by the way, averaging 10-plus rebounds, 5-plus assists, the first player since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to average 30 and 10 and 5 with a new team. I think that's the right stat. But Dan, 34 points a game to open up his postseason career with the Lakers. Can't script it any better.
Yeah, it's almost like this guy's a postseason riser that, you know, maybe just like 8 months ago was elevating a team to the NBA Finals. Who amongst us could have foreseen this eventuality? I mean, the fact that he had 31 of LA's 94 points, like this has been a ground and pound kind of series, with the exception of the early part of game one where the Wolves were just hitting everything they could. This is a slugfest. This is like a drag you down into the mud kind of series. And even in the mud, Luka's putting up 34 points a game. And really carrying that LA offense. Like, you know, we've made a lot of the partnership with LeBron James and of the way that it's allowed Austin Reeves to come along and give them kind of a three-headed monster. I think what we're seeing against an elite Timberwolves defense is like, it's really a one-headed monster at this point. It's like that, and that is, that monster is awfully imposing, but LeBron is kind of has ceded some of the primacy in terms of the offensive function. Reeves kind of gets in where he fits in, and I think he was 7 of 8 from 2-point range in game two, and like, he wasn't able to get it going outside the arc, but still an important driver, isolation player for them. Luka's the straw that stirs the drink, though, and I mean, this is why you give up whatever you need to give up, and maybe not even everything you could have had to give up to get Luka Doncic for moments like this and for series like this. And
they got Austin Reeves in that deal, didn't they? The Mavericks.
Not so much. No. Well, I mean, they got Max Christie, which was good because once you get Max Christie, you can flip Quentin Grimes. And so everything's working out, Dallas, in that situation. But yeah, I mean, listen, the idea that a guy who has played with Dwayne Wade, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, Anthony Davis, that he's played with all of these future Hall of Famers, and this is the highest scoring opening for any teammate he's ever had. Awfully impressive stuff. But then Luka Doncic is awfully impressive.
Yeah, he is. This is his team now. Like, this is his team. And I didn't think it was going to happen so quickly. That after the injury, the calf strain, and getting acclimated, I kind of thought there was a little piece of Luka Doncic that was like, just get me through this season, and then I will kind of have the whole offseason and training camp to establish myself as the alpha, as the face of this team and the generator of the offense. And he's proven that to be false, is that he's ready right now to take over the reins. And when you look at the numbers, everything kind of revolves around him offensively. LeBron James has his time of possession in the first two games of this postseason. He's coming off this groin injury. He seems to be okay, but he's not 100%. It's clear. And when you look at the numbers, his time of possession is 4.1 minutes per game. The ball is in his hands for 4.1 minutes. That's 30th in the NBA. And this is the same guy that just a couple of years ago, he had 9.6 minutes per game time of possession for the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's insane. So he's, even last year, this is a guy who even last year was above 5. This is the lowest we've seen in the stat tracking era, you know, the sport view tracking and the camera tracking, second spectrum, where we can track time of possession, how much, how ball dominant a player is. LeBron James, since 2014, has never had the ball in his hands less than what he's dealing with with Luka Doncic now at just 4.1 minutes per game. And in his championship run with the Lakers in 2020, his time of possession was at 8. So this is half of what it was when the Lakers last won a championship. And so I think there's two things going on. One, Luka Doncic is on his team, and Luka's averaging 7.7 minutes per game in time of possession. And that's right around where he is typically in the postseason, but LeBron is taking a clear back seat. And whether that's voluntary, is like LeBron is like, dude, I can't carry this like I did in the past. I need you to run the offense and generate all the looks and be that first action, whether it's ISOs, whether it's pick and roll attacks, whether it's in the post up. I need this from you. Or if this is just Luka being like, yeah, this is my team. This is my team now. And so Luka Doncic, I think, is much better than I thought he'd be coming off that calf strain. And look, Nico Harrison made that deal saying, like, defense wins championships. I also think he made the deal because he felt like Luka Doncic was going to break down at some point. But it's very clear, Dan, that he is not breaking down right now. And he is playing, I wouldn't say the best he's ever played, but certainly the scoring volume and the ability to get to the spots that he wants to get to, I think has been fantastic. And I think there's some ways that the Lakers need to improve going against the Minnesota Timberwolves here when they're going to Minnesota. I mean, it's split 1-1. Dan, we're going to talk about what are the four things that the Lakers need to do or keep an eye on going forward in this series to maximize Luka Doncic and keep that 34 where it is the highest that LeBron James has ever had as a teammate in his postseason career for the opening two games. Right after the break, Dan, we'll get into your four little numbers. All right, Dan, we're talking about Luka Doncic and his incredible scoring with the Lakers in his opening two games. What is on your mind when it comes to watching this Lakers team going against the Timberwolves and trying to win this series?
Well, our first little number this week is 13, which is how many minutes Luka Doncic has sat through the first two games of this series. They play 48 minutes in a basketball game, so 96 of them. He's only sat for 13. 13 is also the number of points by which the Lakers have been outscored when he is off the floor. So a point a minute with Luka off the floor. 83 minutes with him on, they're playing the Timberwolves even with that blowout win in game one. 13 minutes with him off, Wolves plus 13. And I think that goes to the point that you were making in our intro, just how central Luka Doncic is now to everything the Lakers do. During the regular season, J.J. Redick, the head coach of the Lakers, had made a point of sort of staggering the rotation so that Luka would be flying solo when LeBron needed to get a breather, and that whenever Luka went off the court, it was, you're going to have LeBron and Austin Reeves. You're going to have multiple creators there. Luka can shoulder the whole load in the other minutes, but we're going to make sure we got LeBron and Reeves out there together. And through two games, they've only needed to do that for 10 minutes because Luka is just not coming off the floor. Like, this has always been the idea with Luka Doncic. He's a heavy postseason minutes player. He is somebody that you would just heap usage on. My question, though, is you mentioned the calf strain earlier. You mentioned Nico Harrison's big, bold bet on a breakdown eventually. Is Luka being this central already a tough path to sustainability for the Lakers as they move through the postseason?
Yeah, it's so tough because the thing that makes Luka Doncic so good is he's huge. He's huge. He's massive. And so you can use him in multiple ways, not just as a ball handler, not just as a guy who's leading the offense as the heliocentric star, but also as the rebounder. He can guard bigs. He can play down low in drop coverage where he's a guy that can maximize versatility and play big. And the issue is, I don't know if that calf strain, or if he's in the best shape of his life, or if he's just trying to maintain and get through this season. Like I said, I feel like this is probably a little too much leaning on him, but I also think LeBron's going to pick it up here in a little bit, and Austin Reeves is going to pick it up here in a little bit. And I wonder if the Jackson Hayes minutes will increase going forward just to kind of relieve them of some of that switching and some of that putting a lot of pressure on Luka Doncic defensively. I wonder if we're going to see this kind of backfire a little bit, or at least have some sort of pushback going forward and making sure they curtail his minutes for the rest of this series. But as, you know, we get into these clinching scenarios, I think J.J. Redick is going to want to play Luka very close to 48 minutes. And historically, he's a 35-minute player in the regular season, and that goes to 40 in the postseason. And I don't know if I think Austin Reeves and LeBron really need to pick up the slack here. It can't be, I don't think, this much usage and this much responsibility on Luka Doncic's shoulders.
It's a little sub number that you led me into so deftly as our host. 18 is how many minutes Jackson Hayes has played through two games. So barely any time at all, like 9 minutes a game, means the Lakers have spent about 80% of the series just playing small. No center on the floor. That includes the 3 minutes that Alex Len got. So if you're playing that, and then you think about who else comes in the rotation for them, Gabe Vincent, Jordan Goodwin off the bench, like they're small guys coming off the bench too. you know, you've got Jared Vanderbilt, you've got Dorian Finney-Smith, you've got Rui Hachimura. Like there's size across the front court positions, but as you mentioned, it puts a lot of premium on, you know, LeBron essentially playing center, those guys battling with Rudy Gobert, with the importance of Luka Doncic rebounding, which he's great at, but all, it's a lot on both ends of the floor, not just creating all the shots, but also what you're tasked with on the defensive end. So yeah, something to keep an eye on. I mean, it's the nature of this build, and it basically was going to be this way. They traded AD. They didn't get the Mark Williams deal done. They didn't get another center in there. This was always going to be what this roster had to look like. It will be interesting to see what that, like what kind of strain that puts on the front court players over the course of the rest of the series. But it brings us to our second little number, and it is little. It's one. It's almost the smallest number you can get. That's how many wide open three-pointers the Minnesota Timberwolves made in game two. One, just That's one crazy. Make in 12 tries without a Laker defender within 6 feet of the shooter, according to NBA.com's shot tracking data. If you broaden it out to anybody within 4 feet, they just went 4 for 20. Not so great. In game one of the series, Minnesota went 19 for 27 on those wide open 6 feet of space looks. Guys like Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid were feasting. They were famining, if that's, you can use that as a verb, in game two. And so I just we'll put it to you this way. It's a very simple analysis, but the Wolves shoot the lights out and they win, and they shoot, they can't hit the broad side of the barn and they lose. So simple as that, or is there something maybe more going on in terms of the shot data that shots that the Wolves were getting and how they're canning them in games one and two?
You know what's funny? Is there any other element in basketball that we just skip over during the regular season, and then in the postseason, it's like the most important thing is the make or miss the shot quality data. Like, how often are we talking about shot quality during the regular season? And in the postseason, it becomes either 1A or 1B in terms of the analysis after the game. What are the adjustments? I know Joe Mazzulla doesn't like to talk about adjustments, and most coaches hate that question because at the end of the day, a lot of each game is dictated by whether the open looks were converted. And in this case, you point out one of 12 on wide open threes, that's the difference in the game. And as good as Luka is offensively, if they're hitting those shots, this is a very different game. Tom Thibodeau said it after game two, where he's like, Mikal Bridges, if he hits one of those threes in the end of the game, we're not talking about adjustments. We're talking about how we just went up 2-0 in the series. And I think this in this series is the biggest wild fluctuation that we're seeing in any series is the make or miss factor. I was tracking this during the game as I was watching on pbpstats.com. They have this great feature where you can track the shot quality live in game. And you can see that in the first like three quarters of the game, the Timberwolves had amazing shot quality. They're getting amazing looks, kickouts, good looks in the paint, and they weren't converting on them. And the number you just said, one of 12, speaks to that. You know, another number, shot quality for the game, the Lakers 52.5, the Minnesota Timberwolves 52.5, exactly the same shot quality, but effective field goal percentage, the Lakers were much better than the Minnesota Timberwolves. And you would not have guessed that by the final score. Minnesota had great looks. I don't think that's a problem. Basically, the average player in the NBA would shoot 52% effective field goal percentage weighted for three pointers, given how close the defender is, the type of shot, all of this. They got good looks. And I think if you're Luka Doncic, LeBron James, and Austin Reeves, you're happy that you won game two. But I don't think you can feel super confident about the defensive side of the game. Yes, they lowered the number of three-point attempts, and that does help. But a lot of them were wide open, and they couldn't hit the broad side of a barn.
Yeah, that's the sort of famous analytical canard here is that like three-point defense is essentially a myth. Like you kind of can't do anything about the ball once it's in the air. What you can do is try to limit the attempt. So the Wolves going from, I think they took 22 in the first half of game one, that it took 10 in the first half of game two. Like the Lakers, clearly the physicality they played with, the pickup points being higher, the attention to detail in terms of their scheme, were much better at turning off some of those looks. Now, the Wolves hit a couple of them, which it's a very different story, as you say, but job one is make sure they can't get as many of them off. And JJ Redick and company were able to get that across in game two. Onto our third little number, 99. Bigger than one. 99. That is Minnesota's defensive rating through two games with Rudy Gobert on the court. with Rudy Gobert off the court, a 112 defensive rating. That spread is, again, this kind of spread between like the best defense in the league and, well, not the best defense in the league, which is kind of what we get every year with Rudy Gobert. It doesn't always look cool, but he's always super impactful. And then when he's not there, you feel it. Through two games, the Lakers have scored 7 points on 18 possessions finished with Gobert defending the ball handler in the pick and roll. So not the big man, the ball handler, the guy who tries to pick him out and draw him out into deep water. 15 possessions of isolation, 16 points, a little over one per possession. Not a bad offensive efficiency, but also not like he's getting beat up like crazy. Time and again, the Lakers and Luka Doncic in particular, we've seen this movie before, they seems like they're seeking Gobert out. They're trying to go at him. For the most part, though, am I nuts in thinking that it seems like he's doing kind of all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you're nuts. I think you're spot on here is that Luka Doncic, he will get like one or two where you're like, oh yeah, he won that battle and made Rudy Gobert look so dumb. There's a couple of those. But more often than not, our brains are tricking us. We remember the times that he looked like he got destroyed out there, Rudy Gobert. We forget all the times that Luka Doncic either got a bad shot or just wasn't converting on these step backs. He was 0-for-4 on ISOs on three-pointers, a lot of them going at Rudy Gobert. There were 9 isolations, according to Synergy Sports, that Rudy Gobert defended in game 2. That is a season high. Now, you can argue, you know, whether, you know, we can pick apart whether that was an ISO or whether that was just a spot up or the different right. play types that Synergy trackers, how they designate whether it was an ISO or not. But the fact of the matter is, the volume that we saw, the number of ISOs, was way higher than we have seen all year for any opponent of the Minnesota Timberwolves targeting Rudy Gobert. And the Synergy evaluation was that the average points per possession on those plays that Rudy Gobert was targeted in the ISOs was just 0.889. And if you look at that and say, okay, I guess the Minnesota Timberwolves live with that, I think it's also important to point out that Luka Doncic didn't really do this last year against the Minnesota Timberwolves as a member of the Dallas Mavericks. We remember that game winner step back where he put him on ice skates, but that was in game 2. He never put him in ISO after that, not once for the rest of the series.
Wow.
And so you're seeing, Dan, that the Lakers have come out and have 15 ISOs lined up against Rudy Gobert in the first two games, way more than we've seen any opponent try to do this against Rudy Gobert. So this is a game plan. They want to get him out on an island. They want to make him try to defend out on the perimeter. I don't think it's been as successful as some of the highlights would suggest. And I also don't think it's like, oh, they should, the Minnesota Timberwolves should be happy about this. I think it's a mixed result. It's a mixed bag. And I do think that the Lakers, the more they do this, I wonder if it's going to tire out Luka. Like trying to go at Rudy Gobert and have him dance around, I don't think long-term it's going to get the result that they want.
That's interesting. Mixed bag in terms of the offensive approach brings us to our fourth and final little number this week, 0.73, which is how many points per possession Anthony Edwards has produced, whether working out of the pick and roll or isolation, according to our friends at Synergy. That includes the plays where he has passed to a teammate who has shot or shot himself, right? So 7 points in 15 possessions, pick and roll ball handler, 26 in 30 possessions in isolation, well under 1 point per possession, which is well under his season average on those sorts of plays. He said after game 2 that he felt like the Lakers' defensive approach was kind of confusing, that it felt like they were throwing a kind of zone at him that he hadn't seen before. There have been people who have, you know, taped Twitter, got into the clips packages and started showing like, actually, it's pretty similar to what Dallas did to him last year. Or he's seen coverages like this where there's loaded up gap help and they're not, you know, clearing out when the cutter goes through to the opposite corner. They're just keeping the guys in his lap. Whatever the case, whether he has seen it before or he hasn't, it certainly seems to be making him uncomfortable or to have made him uncomfortable in game 2. Had 9 assists in game 1, had no assists in game 2. And I think that's sort of the battleground here when you talk about the Wolves offense. You know, you just mentioned whether it's going to be a positive thing for Luka to keep going at Gobert. How you produce when the defense forces you out of your comfort zone is kind of like that last level for a superstar talent. How do you think Anthony Edwards is handling that challenge so far? How do you think he's going to handle that the rest of the way against this Laker defense?
I think he's got to try to get to the cup more. And I know he's seeing lots of bodies, but he had two free throws in the second half. He's not a guy that likes to just stay out on the perimeter. We know that he on that, when he put two hands in that, where it's just like, dude, he's got crazy hops, and you want to see that more often of him going at the rim. I just think that Anthony Edwards is going to start figuring out these coverages a little bit now that he's got two games under his belt going back to Minnesota. I think he's got to get to the cup and start trying to get to the free throw line more. And the physicality is the buzzword of the postseason, and the referees opening two games were not calling fouls. They called a lot of fouls in this one, and it seemed like it was really choppy there. And I think the second quarter was every play back and forth, just couldn't get into rhythm. Both teams just could not get into rhythm. And I like the jawing with Luka Doncic that Anthony Edwards is having. Like, before the game, he's talking smack. During the game, he's talking smack. I think we're still waiting for the Anthony Edwards breakout game here. And the possessions, man, there have been so few possessions. It is like 80s basketball. Like, the games are in 87, 86 possessions for the entirety of the game. It's very slow it down. And the Lakers want to get up in transition. The Minnesota Timberwolves want to get up in transition, but they've been staying. Not many fast break points. And I think Anthony Edwards has to have a lot more aggression and try to get out in the open court. But it starts defensively. They got to get stops. And it starts with Rudy Gobert and everybody else. The stat that was crazy was that in the first half, in game two, the Lakers went 12 for 12 inside the paint. And a lot of those misses, you could start a fast break where you get easy buckets for Anthony Edwards getting downhill. And when you're pulling the ball out of the basket a lot of those times, it's a lot harder to go against the Luka Doncic, LeBron James, DFS half-court offense. It's set defense. It's going to be a lot harder to score against for Anthony Edwards if they're not getting stops and turnovers defensively. All right, Dan. So those are the things we're going to be watching for the Lakers-Minnesota series, which is split 1-1 going to Minnesota. Now we're going to talk about another team that is trying to win a championship. The Boston Celtics, with Jason Tatum dealing with a wrist injury that will likely keep him out of game two against Orlando. We'll talk about that in just a moment after the break. All right, Dan, let's get into some news here. Jason Tatum is set to miss game two against Orlando. They're up 1-0 in the series. Jason Tatum having a right hand shooting hand wrist injury that Joe Mazzulla seemed to think wasn't a big deal after game one. Might have been gamesmanship, but in the injury report, he's listed as doubtful. Dan, this is big news when it comes to Jason Tatum, who has been maybe the most durable superstar in the NBA since he entered the league.
First off, it just reminded me that Joe Mazzulla, when Kristaps Porzingis came up a little bit, hobbled last postseason, was like, yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. It'll probably be fine. And then it turned out to be some kind of like ankle injury no one had ever heard of to a sheath of an, and then he was gone for like 6 months. So hopefully that's not the case with Jason Tatum. Hopefully this is just Joe Mazzulla's stock answer being, I'm not giving you anything. I'm giving you nothing. That's it. Jason Tatum has been in the playoffs every year since he got drafted in 2017. And he has yet to miss a playoff game. He's played 114 straight playoff games. This would be his first miss, and he's listed as doubtful heading into game two here. And that's like, obviously the Celtics, it's a big part of the case every year when we talk about MVP or all NBA. It's that Tatum is just, he is a constant. He is such a dependable rock. He's solid across the board on both ends of the floor, but he's also just always there. He rarely misses games. He plays big minutes every game he's in. So the Celtics going into a matchup, even they would still be heavily favored, I would imagine, against the Orlando Magic, just given how difficult it is for the Magic to score. But going in, this is literally uncharted territory for them in a playoff game. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of matchups Mazzulla, or how Mazzulla juggles his lineup, what he would look to do and where he would look to redirect things without Tatum, because they've just been able to depend on him for so long every night when you get to this time of year.
Couple things here. One, the Boston Celtics must not respect the Orlando Magic. That's where my first mind, when I saw the news that he was doubtful, I was like, oh, they're just giving him a game because they really feel like they don't need him to win this series.
It was the LeBron thing against the Raptors. It's like, I've been in adverse situations. This is not an adverse situation.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't think if they're in the Eastern Conference semis or even in the Eastern Conference finals, I don't think he's missing this game. I'm no doctor, and neither is Joe Mazzulla, apparently, as you pointed out. That you look at this and that it went from he's fine, whatever, to he's doubtful. It speaks to the fact that this is either really more serious than they imagined it to be, more painful and sore than he imagined it to be, or this is, the Orlando Magic, we can get through this without Jason Tatum. But I would worry about Jaylen Brown, especially shouldering the load that they have to pick up the slack from Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown has had knee issues finishing the regular season, play 10 fewer minutes than Jason Tatum without being in foul trouble. They're clearly trying to ramp him up as he came off missing the last three games of the regular season with the knee issue. I worry about this if you're the Celtics. And I actually think the Cleveland Cavaliers, looking at this situation, they got to be feeling pretty good right now in terms of the path going forward. Just might have gotten a little bit easier now that, look, it's one thing for Jason Tatum to be dealing with an injury. It's another for Jaylen Brown to have to be a guy, the number one option in his absence. Now, look, the Celtics have never been a heliocentric team. It's not like they're going to look at Jaylen Brown, who I don't think looked very sharp in game one. Just 6 of 14 shooting, didn't hit a three-pointer. He's been missing a lot of threes lately. He's going to have to do better in game two without Jason Tatum. But I also think like this just puts more pressure on the next guy. And that next guy has been dealing with that injury. And so I think the Cavs, if I'm handicapping the playoff, the Eastern Conference Finals going forward, I think you got to give a little bit more increased odds for the Cleveland Cavaliers coming out of the East, purely based on the fact that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both have to be great for them to beat the Cavaliers. And the same thing goes for the Cavs. They got to be a clean bill of health going against the Celtics if they have a prayer. But I do think this is a bigger injury for down the line because of the fact that Jaylen Brown has been dealing with something on his own.
You're absolutely right. But before, lest our millions of Orlando Magic fan listeners give us, any kind of flack for skipping right past them and looking to the two rounds from now. It's an interesting opportunity, right? The Celtics have been really good when they haven't had Jason Tatum during the regular season. I think they were 8-2 in the 10 games he missed this regular season, 20-6 without him over the last three seasons, which is like the Joe Mazzulla era. And there's still, as you mentioned, plenty of places for them to go offensively. If it's not Jaylen Brown, maybe it's Derek White. Maybe it's more Kristaps Porzingis, looking to get him in the post or pick and pop with him.
Or the sixth man of the year, Peyton Pritchard. Congratulations.
Right. So like while it does, it increases the strain on each of those, next man up. They do have a bunch of next men's, so maybe there's a way to make that work. But this opens, if Paolo Banchero can be the best player on the floor for two games in the next week, then what you mentioned, we're talking about not just, I think it would be dramatically shocking for this outcome, this series to change. The minutes where they'd have neither Tatum nor Brown, the Celtics have gotten drilled this season. They haven't been that many of them because that's why you have two of those guys. But if you have more of those and the Magic win those minutes, who knows? The bigger point though is like, if this, instead of this being a four-game Celtics sweep, if this takes six, if it goes longer and you put more minutes on those guys' legs, you're already talking about an older Al Horford, an older Jrue Holiday, a rotation full of guys that played 800 games last year, and then a couple of them went and played in the Olympics. Like, there's a lot. The strain, the challenge of going back-to-back is extraordinarily difficult. The strain of the increased responsibility and the workload would be even greater on those guys over the next couple of weeks. So it, maybe it's a matter of, it's probably a little bit of both, right? This could use some extra time. And also we think we can get away with it. You better get away with it because the longer this series goes, the more variables you got to deal with. And I don't think that a Celtics team that's already got a long road ahead of it to try to get back where it wants to go, wants to be dealing with any more variables. My guess is that Joe Mazzulla, adjustments he might not want to talk about, math he loves talking about, but independent variables he can't control, I don't think he likes that very much.
I feel like a little bit like Jaylen Brown right now, just shouldering the load here, fighting through this knee injury, fighting through the vocal cords. It's the playoffs. I gotta bring it. And we got
well,
through
you
the
are
show.
Bringing it. That's the good thing.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel, I feel pretty good about it. I don't feel like a finals MVP right now, like Jaylen Brown, but I did fight through it, and we'll see how the Celtics do on game two. Dan, that'll do it for us this week. If you haven't caught it already, we had a little special trinket, which we'll play here in a little bit. Our producers, Emmy and Stone, went into the lab and put together a highlight reel or a blooper reel. What would you call this? A sizzle reel of our scat Jack Black impersonations?
It sizzles to me. It sings in my heart. It makes me 1% happier every time I listen to it, which has been multiple times. The thing to know here is that whenever we have the rare, exceedingly rare occasions where we make a mistake or have a flub in recording the show, Tom has a habit of doing like an impression of Jack Black from Tenacious D and from the Minecraft movie, and it makes me very happy. And I sometimes sing too, but not as much as Tom does, and it makes me so happy. And our producers in the, because they want to make us happy, they put a bunch of those things together, and it's a wonderful way to spend a minute of your time.
Yeah, a little BTS for everybody that they can listen to this.
And it's smooth like butter, so it works for everybody.
I love BTS. Butter. I love butter. Peanut butter also.
Oh, hell yeah.
My kids, whenever they see a Reese's peanut butter cup ad on TV or just anywhere, they'll put it in the freezer. I like my Reese's peanut butter cups in the freezer. So they'll for Easter especially, they'll just like grab Reese's peanut butter cups and throw them in the freezer. And I'll just like every once in a while just see open it up, and my girls will look at me like, "Daddy, did you get one?" And I'm like, "Oh, this is amazing. I love having kids. They're so nice, except for when they, you know, run around New York City and you're trying to keep them out of traffic, and then you know, got to raise your voice. I don't think it was that. I think it was the steam. I don't know. That's going to do it for us today on The Big Number. You can catch us on YouTube. Go subscribe. Listen wherever you get your podcasts, and hit that subscribe button. Leave a review, 5 stars, please. And I want to thank Emmy and Mike and the entire squad that works behind the scenes to make this happen. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. And until then, enjoy the sultry sounds of us doing whatever it is that we do.
At some point, I want like a cut of every time Tom does that.
Brain is telling me no.
Concrete jungle where dreams are made.
I'm gonna say it one more time. Wrong, 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 wrong. Kill some time. Let me pull it out. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. Ba 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 be do. Do 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 on this number.
My day's 1% better every time he does it. Anyway, sorry.
1%. That is the scat increased percentage on The Big Number.